It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here. Mary Jo Foley. We're going to start off by talking about the massive fine the EU just laid on Google and how it compares to what they did to Microsoft. Finally, a denial about a Surface phone. But what is the Andromeda after all? And the woman in charge at Microsoft. You may not know her name, but you know her work. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley. Episode 578, recorded Wednesday, July 18th, 2018. Barnstorming. Windows Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you can get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/Windows. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/windows. And by LastPass. Secure every password-protected entry point to your business. Join over 33,000 businesses and start managing and securing your company's passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. It's time for Windows Weekly. Yay! Every week. Every week we get together. I wish, you know, Paul Thurrott's here. He's from Thurrott.com. Mary Jo Foley from allaboutmicrosoft.com. And I was, I can't remember why. Oh, I was playing Lisa a part of our show from last week. Lying in bed, Lisa and I in bed with our laptop in between us. Watching,
sure. Listening to the sound of my voice.
Listening to Paul. And I was just, no, and this is sincere.
Yeah.
I really thought, gosh, those two are great. I really enjoy this show. Mostly I just sit back and enjoy it. You guys,
I was horrified by that story.
I know. After the show came out, because everybody was sending us notes.
It's not just the animal thing.
I mean, obviously that's the primary. The notion that someone has done this, has stood in front of you as you explained the missing animal, gave it as a gift to their child, is disgusting. To me.
I know, isn't that
disgusting?
But you guys got him back, right? He somehow came back to you guys.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is he's been hanging a lot with us lately. Lisa was going to – we have a cat door that reads chips, and she was going to lock the door against him.
Oh, sure. Man.
Saying he's not ours anymore. And she decided, no, I love this cat, and if he wants to visit, he can. And, we've been seeing a lot more of him because I think what happened is they're locking him in to keep him from, running home, and he's resenting that. So it's like any teenager. You can't – they'll resist. Yeah. You can't – you have to do the opposite of what you want them to do.
Right.
I should show you.
I'll get Lisa has them now. The giant pictures of the cats she has had printed up.
And wishes
to post on our front lawn.
Exactly. If you see this animal, it belongs
to
us.
Yeah.
Oh, don't tangle.
That's a little Miss Privilege next door.
Don't tangle with my wife. That's just the lesson. Now, meanwhile, don't tangle with the EU.
Yeah.
It could cost you. I am curious what y'all think of this, because I think it's a travesty. But what do you think? Microsoft, I'm sorry, Google handed, take two. EU has given Google a €4.3 fine, $5 billion fine, antitrust fine, saying it abused its power in the smartphone market.
I feel about this exactly like I did when the Microsoft DOJ came down on Microsoft. I think they made the right call, and I think it's not going to matter.
Oh, interesting.
I agree with that. But I think it's in part because of what happened to Microsoft, Google could change, and in part just because of the passage of time. I mean, it moves so slowly. Google already dominates mobile. They dominate search. If they have to change their licensing agreements with handset makers, it's done. We're done. There's no third viable ecosystem waiting in the wings to kind of take over.
Well, and that's
Android.
Google's point of view is
there's competition from Apple to, I mean, it's, if it weren't for Android, Apple would be completely dominant. Mm.
Well, but we don't give them a monopoly as a thank you for that. I mean,
they don't have a monopoly. Apple has a, you know, Apple would have a monopoly. They don't have a monopoly. Well, it's 50-50.
Well, in the United States,
but outside the U.S., it's not that, right?
Yeah, no, it's
because
more like
Apple's
85,
phones
15.
Are overpriced and people yeah. want. Okay, there's a thousand Android makers. Google's yeah. getting bit by its generosity, in my opinion, by its generosity. They open sourced Android.
Then they tied OEM's hands, just like Microsoft did with PC makers, right? They kind of threatened yeah. them. They said, hey, if you don't take our apps, our search, our browser, we're going to not let you play ball in our ecosystem.
That's not
so
exactly
good luck
it.
Having
That's,
your own Android
no,
over there.
They say if you want the Google Play Store and you don't have to have it, but if you right. want it, you need to do the whole Google services thing. I don't think that's unreasonable. Right. If you don't want it, you don't have to have it. And there's plenty of phone manufacturers, including, by the way, Amazon, who have forked Android and used it for free without licensing because they're not required. It's an open source project to create very robust ecosystems. The customer wants Google services, and so the pressure comes not from Google but from the customers who say, well, I'm not going to buy an Android phone unless you have the Play Store on it. I don't. Okay. I think that's customer demand.
Hold on. We got to unpack everything you just said because I agree with it 100%, but just a couple of things that kind of factor into this. One, antitrust law in Europe is not based on consumers. It's based on competition. Right. And what Google is doing does harm competition. The interesting thing to me is I think they will make a couple of small compromises that address the three or four, whatever was key complaints that they had about their behavior. It won't change the market in the slightest for users. It won't really change the market for anybody because when, like you said, Google's in an interesting position. There's a big difference between Microsoft and Google when we compare the antitrust cases. You know, Microsoft bundled a bunch of crap into Windows to try to push their way into new markets. And to be clear, in the beginning, it was crap. You know, Internet Explorer was terrible. Windows Media Player was terrible. Windows Messenger was terrible. Some of them got better over time, you know, for sure. But like you said, and this is correct, people want the Google apps and services. They want them on iPhones. If you go and look at the top, list of top whatever on iOS, you're going to see a lot of Google stuff in there. And as a handset maker, you would be committing suicide to release a device.
No. There's plenty of Android devices that don't have Google services on them. And the Fire stuff is the most visible.
No, I mean as a handset maker. So for the 1.5 billion handsets that are sold every year.
But don't you think Android, as Sundar Pichai posted on his blog, has created more choice, not less. If Android out of the world, what do you have?
Yeah, you have Windows, which also had offered the same level of choice. The problem is that the harm is to competition. So in the Microsoft world of the 1990s, one of the greatest examples of all time of this abuse was that they denied IBM access to Windows 95. They weren't able to ship devices at the launch because IBM owned Lotus. And Lotus applications competed with Microsoft's Office applications. They literally punished them for this.
Yeah.
So they weren't able to sell PCs with the newest version, you know, the new exciting new version of Windows right away. The fear on the Google side is that they're wielding the same kind of power.
Yeah, but the difference is that Microsoft didn't open source Windows. If
you're right. You're right.
What would Samsung have done if there were no Android? Would there be a Samsung ecosystem? Would they have written their own OS and that would have been a better thing?
Well, they do have their own OS.
but it doesn't work.
Let's go back to this because what you just said is important. I'm not saying it's the thing, but I really do feel like Google has learned from the mistakes that Microsoft made in the past. The big thing about Windows versus the Mac, essentially, which was really what that battle was that both systems were proprietary. Google has came of age in a point in time where you fear everything Microsoft does, and they've done a lot of things that don't make sense from a business standpoint simply because they feel the need to push Microsoft back a little bit. And I think one of the decisions they made when they did the Android thing was that Microsoft had not open source, but open platforms that anyone could adopt on both mobile and the PC. They went with an open source platform so that it could go into different directions. And you're right, there are, you know, like Amazon, Kindle, whatever, Fire is a great example of that. So that is a factor. There's no doubt about it. Sorry, I just didn't want to skip over that. I think that bit's important.
I thought you were going to say more. So the second complaint that the EU had, okay, take aside Google Search, Chrome, and the mobile app store, Google Play Store. The second charge they brought was Google is paying certain large manufacturers and mobile operators to exclusively pre-install the Google Search app on their device. Again, to me, this is just exactly what Microsoft did, right? And to say that consumers want that, I don't know. I feel like it's a chicken and egg, right? Like, if I didn't have to use the Google Play Store, but somebody else had a store that had apps in it, maybe I wouldn't use the Google Play Store.
Samsung has a store with apps in it. There are a lot of companies that have app stores. Yeah. They're terrible, but they exist.
I think that kind of thing is confusing.
And I should point out, there are a lot of Android phones that do not have Google services on them, including all the phones sold in China.
Okay, that's fair. Google can't get into China because of the way China is.
Google doesn't want to be in China because of the way China is. Google withdrew from China.
I just
I feel like us saying, you know, all consumers would prefer Google Search over Bing or any other search vendor on these devices. It's saying, well, that's what they got on their device.
But
and
you
then
can
they
change
got used
it.
To it.
It's not locked in.
You can change it. Know, and by the way, that's
in fact, that's that the is, Microsoft.
That's another.
Look how much choice you have on an Android device. You can use a Microsoft desktop with Bing Search. You don't have to
Cortana
use Cortana
as the
store.
Assistant.
Yeah.
You can use the,
Android is about choice. Right. Android is not, I can't believe in a world where Apple goes around doing what it does, that Google gets dinged.
We're jumping past things too fast. You're right about that stuff. It's better than iOS. But that's not what Google is getting in trouble with antitrust for.
Right.
No one is complaining about that. That is an advantage of Android. The fact that that's that's true doesn't obviate this other stuff.
But if there during the Microsoft stuff, if there were a player as big as Microsoft, would the Microsoft DOJ, Microsoft EU issues have made any sense at all?
No, it wouldn't have come up because they wouldn't have had a monopoly.
Well, I would submit there is a player as big as Android,
but there isn't in Europe.
Well, no, there isn't really. They don't buy iOS in Europe. I see a lot of iOS in Europe.
No, they do, but they're not the dominant player that they are here. Right?
Worldwide, Android is 85% of all smartphone sales. It's more than 85. It's probably like 87 or whatever. It's not 50-50. It's 50. It is 50-50 in the United States.
All right,
and
according to StatCounter, iOS is 25% of the market in Europe.
Okay,
that's enough to make Android not be
but
there was no 25% operating system when they went after Windows.
But I think the issue is actually isn't Android by itself. It's search and Android. In other words, the thing that's happening here is you've got this monopoly service, Google Search. And now the world is changing. It's going to mobile. All of your money from advertising is coming from the desktop. We need to figure out a way to make this work in mobile as well. And they're able to leverage their monopoly in search, and they do have a monopoly in search in Europe, to force the companies that
or because if I made a delicious meal and consumers preferred it, is that monopoly power or is that a delicious meal?
But if you've never had anything but that delicious meal offered to you, is that a choice?
Well, there are definitely Android phones without Google services.
There are tons of them.
People don't want them.
I don't think there are.
Oh, yeah. You can buy all these crap phones. They're not very good.
I'm sorry, but the problem is I agree with everything you're saying. So it has nothing to do with the issue.
Yeah.
The issue is about competition. You're right. 100%. Everything you said is correct. It's just that that doesn't matter to this ruling or this issue.
That's socialism.
That could be too. That's fine. Here's the thing. So, first of all, you're right. Customers do want the Google products and services. You know, one of the
not because Google is somehow pressuring them to do it, because it's a good product.
Well, just okay.
They do have a choice.
Hold on a second. The Google products and services are often the best ones available for sure. And how they got there, I guess, is kind of immaterial. You could make the argument that by the time IE6 came out or whatever, it was better than Netscape, whatever they had at the time. Maybe, I don't know, but how they got there is the important part of it. And, And it's the reason why I think the first thing I think it was Mary Jo said right up front was this isn't going to matter. And I agree with that 100% because when you look at the things they're complaining about and you look at what Google would have to change to meet these demands, it wouldn't. It's not going to change anything. And yeah. I think what's going to happen is this will not be the several year ordeal we saw with Microsoft. They will go back and forth. They will settle. They'll make some compromises. The EU will make some compromises. And the market will not change in the slightest.
Yeah.
And ultimately, that's good for everybody because you got to think about all of the constituent parts to this, the handset makers, the wireless carriers, the developers, and then, of course, the customers, all of whom would be impacted by whatever potentially dramatic thing could happen to Android. I don't think anything dramatic is going to happen to Android.
No. Or you get stuff like Microsoft K and N, you know, Windows K, Windows N, which had things taken out like the media player and the browser. Sure. And it's like, who used it? No one.
Or the joke making the rounds on Twitter today is, what are we going to have now? Like a search ballot box on the when you set up Android?
Right.
You know, like a browser ballot box, whatever. So,
well, what does happen? I mean, Google's appealing, but if Google were to pay the fine, how do they have to change their business now?
They have to meet. So let me just bring up the demands. It'd be easier just to read these things, just so we understand what they are. They basically have to meet. They have to adjust the four. I think it was four areas that the EU pointed out as being illegal behavior. I guess it's three of them. Google requires hardware makers to pre-install the Google search app and the Chrome web browser as a condition for licensing the Google Play Store. Google pays certain large manufacturers and mobile network operators to exclusively install the Google search app on their devices. And Google prevents hardware makers that want to pre-install Google apps from selling even a single other device running an alternate
Android 4. That's not bad. So if Samsung decided to make a non-Google Android device, they couldn't. Yeah. That one I agree with. That's
Google
bad.
Home just fired up in the other room. It thinks I was talking.
What do you want? So I agree with that. Relax. They shouldn't strong arm phone manufacturers who are doing a Google services phone to not do any other kind of Android device. That's okay. I agree with that
I don't think Google's going to mind because they sold OS 2, actually, which by the way was probably part of that 1995 thing.
Yeah. Right.
Very similar, right?
Well, I think Microsoft might have done that with OEMs, saying, you know, you can put Windows on that thing, but you better not put anything else on it. I wouldn't be surprised if you want your $5 discount.
Yeah, that is what they said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, and that's anti-competitive. I agree with that.
Yeah.
There's an anti-competitive aspect to rewarding the largest manufacturers and the largest wireless carriers. That kind of hurts competition as well. Because those guys are getting sweetheart deals on Android licensing that the small guys are not. And it makes it harder for them to get, you know, to have an even competitive playing field.
So it sounds like if Google wanted to, they could offer a package, a licensing package that would include all the Google stuff at a fair price to all comers.
Yep.
And not in any way prevent somebody from doing a Google-less phone. Which some might do, although I doubt there's much demand for it.
I think, you know what, this is classic. If you think about any of the big tech companies, Microsoft is the one I'm most familiar with, and Mary Jo probably as well. But if you think about companies that grow and become humongous, like Amazon has, like Apple has, like Google has, the real issue with antitrust ultimately is that you have a mature, dominant company that's still acting like a scrappy startup.
Right.
And the behaviors we might celebrate in a small company are suddenly reprehensible, if not illegal, in a company that is dominant or has a monopoly. And I think it's hard to make that context shift, you know, for the company.
I just don't want the EU to discourage companies from making open source operating systems and giving it away and then having a version that is not free, that has more features. I think that's imagine if Apple had done that with iOS.
Sure.
It would be an amazing world. It would be a good thing. So I think Google did the right thing. I think they'd done some wrong things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't
feel like this has anything to do with it being open source. I think we have to divide free and open source, right? So
if you make a closed source operating system,
you can still make it free, like Microsoft did, right?
Yep.
But that's not the issue. If it's a closed source operating system, it would come with Chrome. It would come with the Play Store, just as Apple comes with the Apple Store, comes with Safari. Google allows you to use another browser. Apple does not.
I know. Yes, it's a huge advantage on Android, and I love that. But that has nothing to do with
it. I feel like they're getting paid. No, but I do feel like they're getting a little getting punished for that. Because what if Google had gone taken the other route and said,
Android? It's not. It's about licensing. It's not. It has nothing to do with the composition of Android or how it's made.
But it doesn't make this this debate makes no sense if there isn't a free version of Android.
Right, and you can have a closed source free thing.
No, but free or not, I really don't. It makes no sense if there's not a version without Google services. If, as with iOS, there's an Android, and Android includes Chrome and Google services, when and any company that wants to use it has to license it.
But that version's not free.
Right. But why does it have to be free? Why should I sell something? Why?
No one is saying it has to be free. No, they're not asking for it to be free. They're saying that they're illegally pricing it for different companies. They have different policies based on the size of the company or the relationship they might have with the company.
Well, that kind of makes sense.
It hurts competition.
You're going to sell a million phones with my operating system on it, I'm going to give you a better deal than if you're going to sell five. Because the support component's equal.
That's not what it is. It's not that simple. Microsoft did the same thing in the 90s with PC makers. They would get these sweetheart deals with certain companies, Dell, HP probably, and they said, "Look, put a bunch of our crap on your desktops. We're going to give you a bet on your desktops, the ones that you sell, and we're going to give you a better price on Windows." And it wasn't about volume pricing is fine. I don't think there's anything illegal with that. You sell X number of units, it goes down in price.
So that's not what they're doing.
No, it's about the special deal. You know, it's about this kind of secret deal that they make where it's like, well, you promote this stuff. You've agreed you're not ever going to promote this other stuff anywhere. Not just on this phone, but on any phone. And we're going to give you a better price on Android. And that's what they're saying is illegal. It's exactly what Microsoft did with PC makers.
Okay.
It is.
Well, I'm sure Google can stop doing all of those things and not.
That's the central. That's what I keep coming back to.
I think they could all those things, right? And they still may be dominant, right?
Because they're already there. It's done. Right. You've punished us for what got us to where we are today. Yep. And it's not going to change where we are today.
Exactly.
The one thing as I was writing this up today that occurred to me is kind of interesting. I was thinking about I almost kind of broke with Microsoft over their antitrust thing. I found the company to be just abhorrent at that time. I when you learned all of the things that they did, it was awful for me.
Do you feel the same way about Google now in the same situation?
No, I love Google.
No, I know you don't. No. That's why I'm asking you, because I know, this afternoon on This Week in Google, everybody's going to be up in arms. But I know Paul's not a huge fan of the Google.
I would say
I use the Google phone.
I feel like I feel like they did a lot of horrible things to get where they are. And I feel like in business, that's kind of what companies do. They get away with what they can get away with until they get stopped. So I'm not saying I like how they got there, but I'm saying I don't think they would have gotten to where they are if they hadn't strong-armed people the way they did. Ditto with Microsoft. Same thing.
I think the Paul of today is more mature than the Paul of whatever year, 1998. No, I mean, if you're wondering why I'm so negative all the time, you can trace it all back to this, because this just broke my heart. You know, it was like this awfulness that came out of Microsoft was just, I just couldn't believe that people would do this kind of thing. Like I couldn't understand it. But what Mary Jo just said is correct. I mean, on the flip side, I will say, and I've said this before, the primary issue I have with Google is that their chance to impact humanity is almost exponentially bigger today than Microsoft's was in the late 1990s. Yeah, there were some 100-something million computers sold a year back then, whatever it might have been. There are 1.5 billion mobile devices, just smartphones, another 130, 150 tablets. And there are billions of people using the web and accessing Google services every day. Every little thing they do has an insidious ability to tilt the scale. And I do think they need, we need to pay attention to that. But I'm not going to bite off my nose to spite my face. I'm going to use a lot of Google products and services because, as we've been saying all along, they're better. By the way, just to kind of bring this whole Google-Microsoft thing full circle, the one thing that occurred to me as I was writing this stuff up earlier today was that Remember, the primary problem with Windows Phone, when you kind of boiled it down, or one of them, was the Google apps and services were not available on that platform. Mm-hmm. In many ways, that thing failed because there wasn't a Gmail app and a Google Chrome browser and, you know, whatever. Like, that mm-hmm. stuff would have transformed that platform into something far more viable. And I really do feel like that's a big difference between Google and Microsoft. The Google stuff is legitimately viable and desirable by consumers. And would be even if they had vast experience with other things.
So do you think that bundling Chrome and Google Search with the Play Store is wrong? I mean, the EU did. Is that morally wrong?
Like,
I mean, I agree with you. They shouldn't prevent phone makers from making non-Google Android.
Look, we're more educated maybe than a lot of smartphones.
They stopped charging people extra, by the way, for app bundling. So,
oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah, they stopped that in 2014 when the EU started looking into this. So, that's a problem. We won't do it. But I don't feel like saying, well, you get the Play Store, you want to get the whole bundle. I don't know. That doesn't bother me. And by the way, most people just install Chrome anyway? I mean,
it's kind of a semantic thing, right? Like, what is Windows? You know, Windows today is this thing that is a platform that has a file manager and a web browser and a mail app and a photos app. And this is Windows.
Had a problem with Microsoft putting Internet Explorer in the operating system. That just was ballot thing, as I think we all agree, was nutty.
I liked it at the time, but I realized it wasn't going to do anything. I thought, you know what? That's good. They're doing what's fair, but who cares? It's already over. Right.
It was kind of a curiosity.
That's not. Do you think it's bad for Microsoft to include Internet Explorer with an operating system?
Well, Internet Explorer was terrible, so yes.
I
think we kind of changed our views over time about that because I feel like at the beginning when they started doing it and they started pretending that the browser was part of the operating system and claimed that in court
they couldn't take it out.
I think that was wrong.
They should have lied about it.
Remember, the other side issue was Microsoft's market power was such that in 1999, I think it was, 2000 or whatever year, Steve Jobs got up at Macworld Boston and talked about how IE was going to be bundled as the default browser on the Mac.
Yeah, because they didn't have a browser at the time.
Yeah, and he made a joke. It's like, relax, you can still swap it out if you want to use Netscape. Probably at the time, eventually, of course, they made Safari. But that's what happens when you're that powerful. Yeah. That can only happen.
Well, see, that's the irony to me, because Apple allows only and one default browser on iOS.
Oh yeah,
which is its own.
The worst.
You can install Chrome, but it won't be ever launched because it's not the default browser. Mm-hmm. You have to manually launch it.
Apple does not have a monopoly, so they can get away with that. And I find that behavior reprehensible. I think it's user unfriendly.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of ask like, does it bother you that they put Chrome, I think, in Google Play Store and Android? The answer is no.
They should go together.
It doesn't bother me that Apple does the stuff they do. It does bother me that Apple – one of the reasons that I'm not using an iPhone right now is this. I don't like that.
Flexible as Android.
Yeah.
Android's very flexible. I think Google did the right thing.
Where Microsoft is doing it, though, you don't like it. Like Windows 10S, you can only run Edge. Mm-hmm. You hate that, right?
The pushback is on that is awful. And there was even – I think they backed away from this, but they – let me see if I'm going to get this right. I believe they were taking away the chance to – configure a default browser across Windows 10, I think.
They were going to make it so if you clicked a link, it opened only in Edge.
Oh, from Mail. Yeah.
From Mail.
And I can only imagine the feedback from that was incredibly negative, and they indicated they're not going to do that.
They're not going to do that,
But yeah, this is the dream. Everyone wants to have a platform as controlled as Apple's and a user base that is just perfectly acceptable with that. It's like the ultimate dictatorship. You know, not just a dictator, but they love you. You know, like it's everyone wouldn't want that market, but I don't think that works in the long term. I don't think that works for the wider world. And I do think that fundamentally, the one big thing that Google learned from Microsoft looking at this and this coming platform war was make this thing open and open. And I mean, open in the broadest possible sense, open in the way we're talking about now, and then open in the sense that there is a free and literally open source version of this if you want it. Mm-hmm. I think open always wins.
I mean, ultimately. Look at today. It was the day 3 of Microsoft's partner show. So Satya Nadella gets up to do the keynote. And a huge part of his keynote was showing what he has running on his Android phone. So if Android wasn't open and you couldn't run Outlook and Launcher and Teams and To-Do and all these Microsoft apps on there, he wouldn't be up there doing that. And if you think about it, Microsoft's helping them market Android, right? Microsoft doesn't have a phone platform. He's up there going, hey, Android's the best thing since sliced bread. Yeah, iOS is good too. But you know what? Android, it has all this stuff. You can configure it.
By the way, that's an interesting, let me ask you, that happened today.
It did.
And today was the day that the EU ruled against Google for Android. Do you think that's coincidental?
I do think it's coincidental because Microsoft prepares these keynotes so far in advance. I think it was already going to happen.
It's an interesting bit of timing, though, on the day that the EU came down on Google for Android.
True.
Microsoft is up. Microsoft's CEO was up there kind of telling
how open this is. Hey, look at this. Yeah, he even called Outlook the best email client for Gmail. Gmail he actually client. Said
yeah,
that,
the,
right?
They
I don't think that's coincidental at all. This has been coming for a while. They've known for months this was going to be the decision.
Yeah, I don't think, though, I don't think because this happened today, they went and said, oh, let's have him do all this stuff on Android in the keynote.
Yeah, but we were saying last week, big fine coming for Google. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it was well known.
Right. Sure.
Well, however it came about, it is interesting to juxtapose those two things.
Yeah.
Especially given Microsoft's fate in mobile and how those things happened. And he talked a lot about these kind of cross-device experiences, very vaguely.
Yeah.
But this notion of, you know, you start a browsing session over here, you pick it up over here, whatever. But I don't know that he ever said it explicitly. I was only half paying attention. But, you know, kind of central to this notion is that you'll be doing this on different types of devices, too. You're not just doing it within some ecosystem, like you might be doing on the Apple side.
But the main reason we started this episode off with the Android stuff.
Oh, yeah. This is a Windows show.
It is. Yeah.
Well, no, because of the parallels.
The parallels, but also this crazy rumor that came out earlier this week. And the way this thing came about is so, like, guys, really? It's from Windows Latest, and they said a Microsoft store employee said Microsoft is going to be launching a Microsoft-branded Android phone soon. Okay, you go back and you look. There's some guy having a text conversation with some guy in a Windows store, like a retail employee, and he's like, yeah, we've got a secret Android phone coming. Guys, No.
I talked to Brad and Mehdi about this that morning, and I said, how do we, you know, how do we handle this?
I know.
And the consensus was, we have to ignore this. This is the dumbest thing we've ever heard. Too.
But then this whole thing that happened today with the EU, I saw people out there on Twitter saying, okay, so if they come down on Google now and they can do a version without the Play Store, maybe Microsoft will make an Android phone. Guys, Microsoft's not going to make a phone.
Because when you look at Microsoft and mobile, the one thing they did get right was the store. Is that what you're saying? is that the
that's
where
we're
going? That's our strength.
Yeah.
Nope.
No. And, you know, they don't want to make a phone. In fact, there was a Wired podcast that went live this week, too, where they were interviewing Panos Panay. And the reporter on the podcast said to him, so there's going to be a Surface phone at some point.
Wow,
and
interesting.
He just said, let me say this as plainly as I can. There is no such thing as a Surface phone.
I think
and
that's unequivocal.
There's not going to be one.
That's pretty clear.
Like what everybody keeps saying, look, now that Google's going to be punished, Microsoft's going to do an Android phone. No, they're not. What they're going to do is what they're doing right now, right? They're going to build on top of Android, build Microsoft Launcher and other apps and services. And that's what they're going to do on the consumer side. They're not going to build another consumer phone. They are not.
Andromeda is not
a phone.
A phone.
It's also not Android.
No, it's Windows. Right. But it's not a Surface phone either.
No.
If it exists.
If it ever comes to market.
You're right. And that's the thing. I mean, people are trying to kind of commingle these two concepts. The notion of a Surface phone and then this Andromeda thing. Andromeda is, if it happens, is a new form factor. Microsoft loves doing this. They haven't actually done it all that much. But my God, do they love this kind of thing. And it's also a PC. You know, it's like, sorry, guys. It's running Windows 10. It's not a special hybrid of Windows 10. It's not like a little, you know, a fork of Windows 10. It's Windows 10, and it's there is some specific software for the hardware, as you would expect. But it runs Windows apps. That's the point. Right. So you have to kind of level set what that means, because I think it's smart for Microsoft too, because I don't think they can afford a high profile failure like they had in mobile. Yeah. But a device like this, when you sell it as a PC, you've got a much smaller market to worry about there. Microsoft only has, I think it's 1.6 or 2% of the PC market. It's a tiny business for them. So this thing doesn't have to go gangbusters for it to be successful relative to their PC.
I should point out, though, that really none of these are phones anymore. They're portable computers.
Yeah, right. And that's what a lot of people said. So when Panos Panay says it's not a phone, it's just him mincing words. Okay, maybe, right? Like, because if it's a PC with telephony capabilities, is it a phone or isn't it a phone, right?
We're using telephony capabilities right now to do this podcast.
On a PC.
I know.
Right. I will say that when my phone rings, I look at it in a confused state.
Yeah, why is that? Too, what sound is that?
Me too.
Yeah.
What is that sound?
Like, wait, someone's
calling
me?
It's terrible. Is a truck backing up? What is that?
I think it's at this point safe. It's not in any way an insight to say that these are portable computers.
Right.
And these are new computing form factors, and that's really what matters.
It's the best iPod that's ever been made. It's a portable internet communications device. I don't even remember the other one.
It's an internet communicator, an iPod.
Yep. Yep.
And a phone.
What was the other one?
Internet. Oh. You forgot already. A phone.
Right. Well, the phone.
Internet
the phone.
Communicator. Yeah. An iPod. And
as an early user of the iPhone, I can assure you that its phone capabilities are probably among its weakest.
It doesn't need to be a phone. That's the. Yeah. I think. I mean, every time I say this, I get all these, especially older people saying, "I use it as a phone," but it is a computer now, right? And computer, by the way, includes, as you just pointed out, the ability to communicate face-to-face or audio. That's not a phone. That's just communication.
Yeah.
I use this thing mostly like I used to use a Zune HD or an iPod. I play podcasts and audiobooks. I listen to music.
Yeah.
There are a couple of apps I use, like Duolingo, which I use for language learning or whatever. I do a little bit of reading, although I prefer a bigger device because I'm 50 years old and my eyes are terrible.
Let's not forget Pokemon Go.
I don't watch. Also, 50-year-old man. And I have watched with amusement as my daughter did that for 15 minutes 2 years ago.
It's back, baby.
I know. And that's about it. You know, yes, there are text messages that occur. I post to social
media.
That's
not a phone thing. That's messaging, right?
Yep.
That's not even.
No, I know. And I sometimes will talk on the phone. I find it awkward, you know.
I don't like it. Yeah.
The less frequent that it happens.
Yep.
The less I expect or want it to happen.
That may be saying something more about us than it is about the device. But
Maybe.
Well, think about what's, on my own phone, this is no longer true because I just got a legitimate phone call the other day. But the last 10 calls I got were all spam.
Spam, yeah.
Before that.
Yeah, me too.
All of them. In fact, the most confusing thing about that last call was that it wasn't spam. You know, I'm like,
who are you?
Screen's not red. What does it mean?
What are you calling me for?
Yeah, I don't know. It was a dentist appointment. But.
Yeah, that's pretty much who it is now. It's my doctor and my dentist. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
We got to get them on messaging.
I made an appointment at the hair cutters with an app on my phone.
Yeah.
I bought a Casper mattress with an app on my phone.
Yeah.
I don't make a lot of phone calls with my phone. I guess it can do that. But
you've heard it can do that.
It's rumored.
No, I mean, this is what's happening. And so... Yeah. So it's a little bit disingenuous to say Microsoft's not going to make a phone. Because they shouldn't make
Microsoft's
a phone.
Microsoft's not going to make a phone.
They shouldn't make a phone. They'd be foolish.
They shouldn't make a consumer handset because the market has decided and there are two players, iOS and Android, and there isn't room for it.
But there's room for mobile computing, I think.
There is. Yeah.
This is a little goofy, but 2.5 years ago, HP launched that Windows Mobile-based Elite
Elite. Do they still sell that?
Nope. So I told those guys at the time, this is the stupidest idea you've ever had. This thing's going to fail miserably. Don't do this. Whatever.
And they had the
continuity part
and all that
stuff. They sold 6 or 7 devices. Yeah. It worked out great. But the issue with that thing was that it was Windows Mobile. And what they did do that was nice was they supported it with kind of an ecosystem of hardware peripherals that could turn it into a computer. Remember, they had like the laptop dock thing and an actual dock
continuity.
And all that stuff. That stuff was good, and they also had services and apps, and they tailored it for the business market, which was smart. They're HP, So I kind of feel like this opportunity still exists.
For the right device, right?
It has, and the right operating system. The problem with Windows Mobile in that scenario was the phone part of it had no apps, and the desktop part of it had no apps. It was the worst possible combination of terribleness.
Yeah.
You know, the reason that putting Android apps on Chrome is making so much sense is that you get the benefit of a really viable mobile platform on a big screen device where you have, you know, productivity apps already. Mm-hmm. Apple's doing it with iOS. You know, Microsoft kind of did it first, but they didn't have a viable, you know, we still have this weird vestigial thing in Windows 10 today, almost. The store is kind of goofy. It's like, what is the point of this? You know, it's like this mobile app thing that never went anywhere.
Yeah.
So it's done correctly. Those continuum type features, I think, I don't know, theoretically still makes sense, but it has to be Windows and it can't be an actual phone. It could make sense like the Surface Go or a small device like Andromeda is rumored to be. Maybe that would make it make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what they need to figure out if Andromeda goes forward or some successor to Andromeda is what is the niche you're trying to fill, right? And if there isn't like a really clear differentiated market for this, I don't think they'll ever bring it to market. I mean, if it just happens to be this really cool note-taking thing that you also could maybe read on and it could make a phone call, I don't think that's enough, you know? I feel like
it's going to
be like, I need X and no, this doesn't do it. And this doesn't do it. So I need this device.
When Steve Jobs introduced the iPad, his justification for this thing is actually kind of incredible. It's instructive to go back and watch this bit of the show. He kind of says, you know, we asked ourselves, is there room for a device that would sit between a phone and a laptop? And to make it has to do these things better. He went down a list, you know, email, browsing, reading, whatever the thing was. And I think it's fair to say no one was actually asking this question, really. But Apple was asking it because they sell devices, and you know, it's kind of interesting for them because it's like they were literally saying, could we sell another device? I mean, is there something else? It was successful, obviously, or you know, not as successful as they thought yet. We haven't really hit the post PC part of it they were promising, just like the paperless office. But they did kind of create this market. All right, so apply that level of thinking to Andromeda, you know.
Right.
What does this thing do for the business or productivity-oriented markets that Microsoft targets that's better than what we already have, which are phones? And now, by the way, you have to put tablets in it too. We have tablets.
Yep.
You know, it's not two anymore. It's three. Phones, tablets, and it's more than three because we have hybrids. We have things that snap apart, and sometimes they're laptops and sometimes they're tablets. We have computers of all kinds. Where does it go?
And the question has arisen lately.
Has arisen.
Is
like
there
out of the blue.
For a third
risen.
Category of device in the middle.
It has risen.
Something that's between a laptop and a smartphone. And of course, we've pondered this question for years
you
as well.
You think he nailed this?
The bar's pretty high.
Well, the way he says that, again, it has arisen. It's even worse than what I said.
Those devices are going to have to be far better
it like arose out
doing
of
some
like
key tasks.
Like woman rose out of Adam's hip or whatever it was. Like that doesn't even make any sense.
The passive voice probably wasn't right there. This is something we at Apple have been considering.
What kind of tasks? Yeah.
What should the third device
what should
like
it do?
Browsing the web. That's a pretty tall order. Something that's better at browsing the web than a laptop?
Also, you have to remember...
Okay.
This is Steve marketing.
Doing email.
Right.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoying and sharing photographs. Video. Watching videos. Enjoying your music collection.
This is why people
playing
like me
games,
said they've created a consumption-only device. Because all of that is content.
If there's going to be a third category of device, it's going to have to be better at these kinds of tasks than a laptop or a smartphone. Otherwise, it has no reason for being.
You could say, I mean, the phone is a communications device. The laptop is a creation device, the so-called truck. Mm-hmm. And the thing in the middle is a consumption device. But now Apple, and by the way, Microsoft too, are trying to shoehorn that creative side into
There's so much that's happened since then that's changed the market. You know, like the arrival of phablets has kind of dimmed the prospects for the pure
because the one device can do both, right? Now it's a consumption device and a communications device.
And, you know, on the PC side, I think the real kind of innovation that's occurring or has occurred, I guess, is these hybrid devices. Even though I may not personally prefer to use one, this notion that there can be a thing you can kind of flip around and use like a tablet mm-hmm. occasionally or draw on it occasionally if that's what you want, it's interesting. You know, even if it's something as simple as I'm in a cramped coach seat, I want to pop the screen off and watch a movie, and it's a little more, you know, easy to do in that cramped space than it is to open a screen on a traditional laptop that only goes back whatever number of degrees and can't be used in this scenario. Yeah. The Andromeda is trying to come into a world that is a lot more sophisticated than the world of 2010 when they introduced the iPad. It's a harder task.
My guess is what they were thinking when coming up with Andromeda was, what's one of our most successful franchises that is different from what other people have? And I'm guessing it's note-taking and OneNote and other kinds of note-taking capabilities, because they keep pushing the pen super hard. I mean, there are people who need a pen. Most people don't need a pen, but Andromeda was going to have a pen. And I think the idea was, we want to make something that's the best note-taking device. Is that enough to have a whole category? No, I don't think, because you can use your phone for note-taking. You can use a tablet for note-taking.
Whatever it's worth, Satya Nadella's senior leadership team has already now nixed two of these devices.
Right.
The Surface Mini was the first, right? Obviously a note-taking device. Yep. And then the first rendition of Andromeda, which they also said no to. Yep. Interestingly, both of them were running on an ARM chipset, which is probably more coincidental than anything. But I think they're trying to get into this. I think it shows you where they're heading with it. You know, this notion of it is more device-like, less stodgy PC-like. Mm-hmm. But just not really ready for
battery life, right? Instant on, long battery life, all the things always connect to PC is supposed to be, except in a slightly smaller package.
Yeah. It's just, they always talk about this, you know, new form factor. We invent form factors. We're aspirational and stuff, you know, but the truth is they've really only struck gold once. And, it's to the point now where the newest thing they released is another version of that same thing. Really?
The Go.
Which is fine. It's a great product. Yeah. And there is a, you know, it's the Apple or it's the Microsoft value proposition of old, you know, like Apple brings the GUI to the world and the mouse and everything, but Microsoft popularizes it by making it available more broadly and at a lower price. And, it's fine bringing the Surface thing, you know, the brand and the quality and whatever to a bigger market is absolutely okay. It's not the same level of innovation as, look, we invented a new form factor.
Right. Once they introduced Surface Go, though, it made me even question more why they would do Andromeda, right? So say they do a Surface Go with an ARM chip at some point and LTE built in at some point. Yep. We already know LTE is happening. Mm-hmm. Why then do you need another device for note-taking if you have this thing, which I assume they're going to market as something great for note taking. I mean, they're targeting it at first line workers and education. Yep. And so why do you need another thing?
I think the way the market has evolved is there was a short period of time where it seemed like an eight inch tablet, a mini tablet made sense. And that time frame in my head was Windows 8.1. I don't remember what year that was exactly. Mm. 2013 through 2014. In the Windows world, it lasted about a year. The mini tablet thing was so big that Apple made a mini tablet, you know, that they still kind of half-heartedly sell. It's like three processors ago, whatever. They don't really update it that much. They're probably going to get rid of it. I think phablets have killed that thing off.
I love it still.
I do too. I use it every day.
Yeah.
So underpowered, it's frustrating to use, but I just prefer the screen size. I love it. Yeah. A mono speaker, it makes me crazy, but I love it. But that's going away. I think there's just not enough people that want that kind of thing. I happen to be one of them, but, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I think what they've discovered is that in the Windows, you know, how low can we go with the screen size before this stops making any sense? And I'm sure they struggled with this particular device, the Surface Go, to make it usable as a computer because it's so small.
Right.
The keyboard is cramped. You know, it's not... Yeah. I'll never be able to use it. I'm a gorilla. That's fine. It's not made for me. I get it. But... I can't. I just, you know, me huddled over this thing is like watching an adult driver on a child's automated, you know, little car thing or whatever. it's just not going to happen. But you know what? I bet there is a market for this. And as unexciting as it may be compared to Andromeda, I think as a product, with a potential marketplace, it's a much bigger deal.
Yeah. I don't know if I don't think I mentioned this, but we were wondering if Microsoft was going to allow people to use the mobile versions of the Office apps for free on the Surface Go because of the screen size. I finally get them to confirm. Yes, they are. Yes.
Oh, good.
And for free.
Totally for free. Right.
Yeah.
You don't even have to have a subscription.
No catch or anything. Oh. No. But
that's according to their licensing terms. That's what it's supposed to be.
Because of the size of the screen.
10 inches and
but
lower.
Then they did say also, but we're recommending you go with Office 365 because you only get basic editing capabilities with the mobile apps and blah, blah, blah. Okay.
That's
but
right.
You can use them for free.
Yep.
On there those you go. Devices. Yep.
I'm kind of excited about this thing. I can't wait to get. I'm getting it.
I kind of want to try it out too. I feel like we only get like 5 minutes with it, but I want to see if it could be something I would use as part of my workflow. You know,
I wish I could have gotten it. I'm going away on Friday night, and I wish I could have gotten it before this because I'd love to.
Yeah.
Just kind of see what the battery life performance. You know, I could watch
pen.
Movies on it. And I got the pen.
You got
nice.
The pen. Yep.
Because it's not a new thing. It's the old pen too. Whatever. Yeah. I like the color. I'm doing the
You're doing burgundy, right?
Yeah. So burgundy all the way. Mouse, pen, keyboard. I wish honestly that the body of the Go was burgundy too, but
yeah. Well,
I know. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean they chose magnesium years ago and it's interesting that I think their tooling and the machining they can do is just kind of evolved with it and that's where they're at now.
You know what else I got? 256 gig.
Yeah. Did you get that for like $100 or something
80.
At Amazon? Yeah.
$80.
80.
Wow.
An Evo.
Nice.
So that's so I got the 128 gig, second tier up version, and I got this. That's going to be a decent amount of storage.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think it's going to be, it's funny. At the same time as getting them that, I'm getting the i9 MacBook Pro. I'm wondering which one's going to get. I kind of like Apple's tier at this point where. If you're a content creator, you need a hefty, beefy desktop operating system. Everybody else, you can use a tablet or a phone. And ultimately, I think it'll end up being this middle phablet thing, period.
Apple needs to make a 13-inch MacBook, and they're going to sell billions of these things. I don't understand why they haven't done this yet, but I think that would solve the needs of most normal people who buy Apple products.
I wonder though. I'm thinking that their thinking is consumers should just use an iPad. We're going to give you a beefier iPad, kind of like Microsoft, right? We'll give you something like the Surface Go.
I just don't think it's there yet.
No, I think it might be this year, but in a year or two,
it will. It will get there.
Yeah. Yep. And then so you'll have desktop computers will be the truck, literally. I mean. And truck price. I mean, it'll be
basically
expensive.
Workstations. You know, as we used to think of workstations.
Yeah,
kind of specialized.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me take a little break, and then we will continue on. There's much more to talk about. Of course, Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We're talking about not just Microsoft today, but other companies as well. But there is more Microsoft news, and we will be getting to that in just a second. But first. A word from WordPress. When you, as a business or an individual, want to make a website, I think there's really only one place to go, WordPress.com. WordPress is used by 31% of all websites in the world. Okay, that's a good start. Including many professional publications like Quartz. Steve Gibson uses it for his personal page. I use it for mine, LeoLaporte.com. WordPress gives me the freedom and flexibility to share my work in my style, my voice, my way. Sure, you have a Facebook page or a Twitter feed. I'm not saying don't, but I am saying you should have your own. Actually, I am saying don't, but that's another story for another day. You should have at least your very own website, a place that people get when they search for your name or business. They find that. That's where you put up your stuff, your best stuff. That's where you sell stuff. WordPress supports e-commerce too. Everything from a very effective big buy button, to an entire store. You can do it all at WordPress.com. Great, friendly, smart customer support team. They're there Monday through Friday, 24 hours, and on weekends too, so you can always get help. They have the most beautiful templates and designs, so you don't have to do any coding. It's not about learning technologies. I think people sometimes don't have a website because they think, well, I don't want to get into that. No, no. If you can type, if you can write something, if you could take a picture, you ought to have a website. My daughter uses her WordPress.com site for her poetry, for her schoolwork, for her thoughts, for her videos. And that's important because then when people search for her, they find her stuff. That's what you want. Plans start as low as $4 a month. I have a business plan. When you're ready to expand your business's reach, things like built-in SEO, search engine optimization, so your site rises to the top, social sharing, which means your customers can tell the world about your site on their Facebook and their Twitter, and all the plugins that you need, hundreds of them, the Kismet anti-spam plugin for comments. It means I can use comments safely, and I really like that on WordPress.com. I don't have to worry. I have complete control of the comment engine, so I can still have comments, but I don't have to worry about what people might put there, especially spam. That's awful. Their Kismet anti-spam filter is the best. They also do things like Google's AMP plugin to speed up mobile sites. I can go on and on, but what you really ought to do is just go to WordPress.com/windows and create that new website. You'll get 15% off right now if you go to WordPress.com/windows. I'm a WordPress believer. I really am. I've been a fan for years. Started using WordPress in the early 2000s, and I just love it. WordPress.com/windows. We thank him for making Windows Weekly possible. Paul Thurrott. Did you want to talk any more about that folding phone, the latest from Samsung? The latest is it'll be out early next year.
The only thing I want to say to that is just that this is another one of those problems with Andromeda. I mentioned with the Windows, the HP Windows Mobile phone, wrong platform for the phone, wrong platform for the desktop. Andromeda is not a phone, is a PC, but is phone size.
Will it just be Windows S, you think?
Yeah.
I guess it has to be. They don't have a mobile operating system.
And I think part of the reason... Well, you know, Mary Jo had written that it was pushed back because of the software. There's no justification for it.
You know, the only problem I really have with Windows on a smaller device is the touch targets on some things are really small. You're just hard to hit.
And you know what? That's going to be a thing on Surface Go, too.
I know. Think. I'm worried about that a little bit. Like, the close a window is hard to do.
Yeah. I think, but that's where we are in this transition. You know, the mobile platform that Microsoft wants to turn Windows into isn't quite ready yet. And at some point, we're going to have a shell that's touch friendly. We're going to have
to. Yeah, but I'm not sure I want a giant close button either. Yeah. You know, this is the way Apple solved that with the iPad is you don't close Windows. You just go home.
Okay.
Everything's full screen, the way, and you just go home.
That was the way Windows 8 was designed, too, by the way.
Oh, really?
The expectation was that you would do that.
Oh, I remember that. And you drag the window down.
Yeah. The problem is Windows users have this kind of compulsive need to be power users and do all these crazy management tasks. We're just kind of used to that. I actually like the way they do it in Windows 10. So if you run a modern app, a store app, full screen, like the movies and TV app or whatever. There's no title bar that you don't see those controls up in the corner when it's full screen, but you can swipe down from the top of the screen and then they appear and you can hit them. And so it kind of solves the problem. It's full screen. You don't have UI cluttering it, but if you do want to close it, you can close it.
Yeah. I never could get it to work on Windows 8. I remember just sitting there
you pull the thing down.
I could never get it to work.
Yeah, there was kind of a weird half swipe.
I know. It's just I don't even want to think about Windows 8 anymore.
I will never forget.
Well, it gives you some sense of why Apple said we're going to have to do something completely different.
Yeah.
And Microsoft didn't want to do that. They wanted to do a hybrid.
But you always, it's the hammer nail thing, you know, you always start with what you have that works and how do we make this keep going?
It's true. That's true.
And Apple, by essentially failing in the desktop, was able to think outside of the box in a way that they might not have if the Mac had 25% or 30% market share or whatever.
Right.
Microsoft, you know, it's just we're going to look back on this and laugh. Right now it's a little too soon, but adding a mobile app platform to Windows is it's just goofy, especially a brand new one, you know?
Right.
And by the way, we have this mobile app platform over on the side. We're not going to use that, but we're going to do something just like it over here. Smart.
Do you think they can dig their way out of that, and that sometime, you know, sometime in the future, there'll just be a way that makes sense?
No. And I think what happens is it evolves. And you know, if you think about like the Mac App Store, which by the way also has not taken off to any major degree, the one thing that they did get right was it's not a new app platform. It's just Mac apps, you know.
Right.
Now that they do have a viable mobile app platform, they're going to add it to it. That's where those apps will go. That makes tons of sense. It's fine. I think, you know, Windows is doomed or blessed by its nature, and it will always be this kind of hybrid environment. I just don't see them getting – this goes back to the very – well, it goes back to – yeah, no, it goes – I mean, it goes back to the beginning. DOS and Windows, remember? And one of the NT points of NT was that it could run multiple operating environments. You could have like an OS2 mode. There was a POSIX mode. It was the Windows mode. Windows on Windows, this notion, this thing we have in ARM is a byproduct of that kind of thinking or terminology or technology. This is Windows, you know, it's a system dominated by DLLs in an age where we don't need shared anything anymore.
Yeah, that's a good
it's,
point.
It's just a legacy mess.
Well, so the way they were going to build Android though, I mean, not Android, Andromeda was they were going to actually have a shell that was kind of like a new way of relating to this. But now, is that going to come to market or isn't that going to come to market?
The trick is doing anything that's scalable. And I mean that in every way imaginable, right? From a UX perspective, from a different types of devices that can run on perspective, from a different architecture perspective. Are we ever, you know, we've had this kind of, it's not an argument. We've sort of had this debate over the years. Think about something just as simple as we have Windows. Why can't Windows split into consumer and business? The core is always the same, so the apps all run everywhere. Yep. But the consumer version could be designed completely differently and look beautiful and be friendly and colorful or whatever. And the business version could be boring or whatever it looks like. But they still all run the same apps. But now you bring it forward to this new era where Windows is – what is Windows? It runs on all this stuff. How do you design something, an app, a file manager, some user experience, the shell, whatever it is, that it looks and makes sense on all the different device types that Windows runs on.
This is tough. I'm not saying it's not a different.
I don't think it's possible.
The way they were thinking was different shells for different devices, right? Like there was going to be a Surface Hub shell, and there was going to be even a Windows desktop shell, Polaris, you know. So I don't even know if that plan is going forward under the new Windows regime or not. I don't know where they're at with that.
If they are serious about making Windows a modern platform, and eventually getting rid of, or at least hiding, the Win32 underpinnings. They have to go there. They have to.
I would think.
It's really goofy in Windows 10 today. If you really sit and think about it, the multiple layers of different things that are there. If you run File Explorer, which is an ancient Windows desktop application, next to Microsoft Edge, and you right-click in those things, those menus look nothing alike. Nothing.
That's true.
And they're just kind of running together. We run all these different things side by side, and it's a mess of inconsistency. That all has to be resolved for Windows to become a modern thing. You know, if they're serious with this, I call it S mode. I don't know, whatever you want to call it, this future, you know, desktopless thing. It has a long way to go. And, you know, Andromeda would have been another half step on a tiny screen, like Leo said, with stupid touch targets and stuff, because it was not going to work.
You know, that's the only reason I even thought about getting a pen with the Surface Go was at least then I can touch the
touch
little
stuff.
Things.
Yeah. Maybe that's why
we had a stylus. That's what Windows Mobile was back in the day, right?
Yeah.
Windows Mobile.
Oh, yeah.
Was
you had a little stylus
6.5.
On the phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
6.5 came out. A pretty innovative front end, too. The honeycomb kind of UI they had there. And they had, if you got notifications on the lock screen, you could swipe on the notification and it would go to that app, which you can do this in Android now, actually. But it took a lot. That's something that didn't appear in mobile OSs again for a long, long time. But the problem with it was once you got past that home screen and you actually ran an app, got in the File Explorer, whatever they called it at the time, Windows Explorer, whatever, it was designed for that little stylus. And the touch points were teeny.
Yeah.
You know, you could not hit them with your finger.
I had a Sony Clio. I think it was a palm-based thing with a stylus. Mm-hmm. I lent it to a friend, and she played Bejeweled for like 80 days. And when I got it back, There was like an etched grid of from the pen going.
It's like a woodpecker going to town on the side of your house.
Yeah. She just kind of ground her way into the glass.
Not to mention the touchscreens of that era were not capacitive.
Oh, they were terrible. Yeah, resistance. Mm. They were resistance.
Yeah, that was awful.
Resistive. All right, let's talk about Office 365. Something good news. Some good news for Teams users.
Yeah. So Brad had the scoop on this earlier this year. He was saying Microsoft would come out with a free version of Teams, and they did. It's like no catch free, too. It's like you don't have to have a Microsoft email address. You can use any email address to sign up. You don't have to have Office 365. It's just plain old free.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, the real challenge, and I've mentioned this before, though, is there's so much resistance once you settle on a platform, Slack, or we use HipChat, right? Even if Teams is free and better, it's just moving everybody over is a pain in the butt. And unless it has to be much better. It's that old rule of thumb. If something's not 10 times better, nobody's going to go to it.
So it's not much better. But the one thing I agree with that. And that's especially going to be the case with businesses that Microsoft targets traditionally, the bigger, mid-sized, larger business. But, you know, I sort of feel like with individuals and very small companies, startups and so forth, aren't we kind of in an experimental phase right now?
It might still be early days. Yeah. It might be that not everybody has settled yet.
Right.
I mean, we spent the last year trying various like cord cutting services, right, on our TV. And one of the neat things about that is, if I have a problem with Sling TV or whatever, cancel it, and I'm on YouTube TV 10 seconds later. It's like the ability to go back and forth is not completely frictionless. I mean, obviously, you want save conversations and whatever. You have to reset things up. But I mean,
it's much, much harder to do that. Because one of the selling points of all of these is that you have history.
Right.
So it's not like you're changing email client or you're changing cord cutting client.
But the reason this is a genius move is Microsoft does have something that Slack doesn't have, which is an upgrade path. So if your business grows and you want to start taking advantage of more advanced functionality, et cetera, well, we get this thing called Office 365 over here, by the way. And when you pay for that, which is sort of like paying for Slack or whatever, you know, you're not, it's like the consumer Office 365. Yeah, you might be buying it for the storage, the terabyte a year. Oh, but you get all this Office stuff over here for free with that. Not for free, but for the amount you're paying. You know, there is a tremendous upgrade path on the Microsoft side.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's not every feature, obviously, is in the free version that's in the paid version, but a lot of features are. They say it's limited to groups of 300, which is pretty big. So that's a lot of small and mid-sized businesses. And you get unlimited chat messages, which I don't think is the case on the free tier of Slack. Search audio, video calling, 10 gigs of free Teams file storage, plus 2 gigs per person of personal storage, full guest access, integration with the Office Online apps. All that comes with the free version. The stuff you don't get is things like the ability to schedule meetings, meeting recording, multi-factor authentication administration tools, searchable transcription and time coding. So, you know, there's a definite difference in the feature sets, but for many businesses, SMBs especially, I think the free version will be okay.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it does everything that I would want.
Yeah.
I would love to have the ability to do the meetings, automated meeting scheduling and the recording and the and it'd be nice to have OneDrive integration. But it's free and there's an upgrade path. So
So if you want to try it out, office.com/teams free is the URL and it's available immediately in 40 languages. So it's already there. It's considered a preview.
This is another version of them and their freemium strategy.
Yep.
It's very smart, actually, especially when you have a tough competitive environment.
Yeah. When they first came out with Teams last year and they said you have to have Office 365, that was a deal breaker for a lot of people. Yeah, yeah. It was like, that was the end of the conversation. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, on the other hand, though, the most likely audience for this is an Office 365 house.
Yeah, but they want to grow that, right? So what they really need to do is reach the millennial types who are not on Office 365, because eventually they're going to grow out of their Darth Vader costume or whatever it is they're going to work every day. And they're going to be in a real company.
Right.
And they're going to need those capabilities.
Does Google have something like this? I don't think they do.
Like a chat-based collaboration.
See, we're a G Suite house. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we don't use Hangouts.
No one does, right?
No one does. I just watched my first public Hangouts thing. It was like the guys behind the web browsers at all the major companies, and it cut out million times. It was not very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. So really, Slack doesn't have the office side of it. We should mention Slack's a sponsor. If you're a development house, you might be inclined to use the Atlassian stuff, because that does have an upgrade path to things like Jira that, a development house cares about. But it doesn't have any office suite. That's not a business. So HipChat is really more for developers, I think.
Discord is out there. There's so much upside.
That's for gamers.
On the Office 365 side, though. It's amazing. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Even if your company is like, look, we just want the online storage, or we just want the automatic scheduling stuff, which actually you'd have to be kind of invested in the whole infrastructure at that point, because you have all your users on AAD or whatever. But it's just it's inexpensive. It's not you're not upgrading the chat service per se, although there are benefits there. You're kind of exploding out the number of capabilities you have.
Right. Mm. Patterson in the chat room says, someday all of this will look like Lotus Notes.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where we're
not group wise.
Maybe it kind of does.
Or group wise. Yeah. I never really, we when I was at ZDTV and ZD before that, we used Lotus as our platform.
We did.
But as I remember, Mary Jo, it was really more just like mail. I don't think we used a lot of the group features.
We didn't use the other stuff, no. Yeah. It was mail. And, mail was complicated enough in those days, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Although
I remember being like, oh, notes.
I just wanted to use Eudora and get it over with.
Yeah.
All right. Whiteboard. Tell me about this. I saw this and I don't know what it is and whether I might want it.
So Whiteboard is an app that debuted on Surface Hub, right? And it was designed for in-person and remote in real-time collaboration.
Very
kind of
cool.
Like, the barnstorming type thing.
Yeah.
They brought it to Windows 10.
Barnstorming is flying an airplane through.
Yes.
In strange
yes,
ways.
Is.
Yes.
Sorry, I misspoke. There's a lot of that going on this week.
I wouldn't say that. So, I would say that. No, I wouldn't say that.
I wouldn't say it's barnstorming, Leo. You did say that. I misspoke.
Would you?
So, sorry. I much prefer to barnstorm than brainstorm. So they brought it to Windows, obviously, where it makes tons of sense. And now they're bringing it to all of the other platforms. So iOS and web are available now. I don't know if it's a preview or a final release or whatever. And Android, obviously, is coming soon as well. And the idea here is that you might have a bunch of people who are kind of remote to each other, and they can brainstorm on ideas together in real time, regardless of the fact that they're not in the same room standing at a giant Surface Hub.
I do kind of like the idea.
Okay, so question for all you guys. Do you guys whiteboard? Like, do you guys do that in meetings?
Sometimes, yeah.
You do?
Yeah. Engineering staff development staffs do. Lisa uses a whiteboard all the time in her office.
Yeah,
we do. I used to do this. I used to have a whiteboard in my office, a little one, but as far as like the company I work for, because we see you then, we go to New York 2-3 times a year and have these all up meetings. Mm-hmm. And we do use a giant whiteboard on the wall. And we draw, we write things down, and we go across and we take pictures of it at the end of the day.
Yeah.
But as far as like a day to day type thing. No, but I think this addresses that. So I almost descended into Microsoft marketing speak, but this kind of new world of work or whatever, where people might be who are you? Yeah, exactly. What happened to you? They might be going to a WeWork type place where maybe you would have a Surface Hub type of thing, or you do work for a company and sometimes you go into an actual meeting space and they have those devices. But more often than not, you're not, and you're remote. Maybe you're home in your pajamas or whatever, and you can still have the same type of activity, but without having to go anywhere and have all the expenses of a work trip.
Right. And so they said, this is for Windows 10, that it went live this week, but it's coming to iOS, the web, and I believe also Android, though their post didn't say Android.
Later on for Android. I think that was why. I thought it was goofy that they didn't mention it at all when they came out with the release, but it is coming to Android.
I think store? iOS and the web is within a month, so it's soon, right? This is coming.
But right now, would I find it in the Microsoft Store? Where would I?
I think so. Yes. For Windows 10.
Yeah. Nice.
Look. Excuse the blaring whiteness.
It's not the same.
I mean,
the whole reason people use whiteboards is so they don't use a computer, right? I understand a Surface Hub, it's like a real whiteboard. You know, it's the physicality of it. I'm not sure what it'd be like on a mobile device or a desktop.
We saw a demo of it, right? We saw like somebody with a big screen who was conducting a Skype meeting, and then there were people who had their little handheld device and they wanted to write like a something on the whiteboard.
Yeah, I could see that maybe.
Maybe.
My Surface 2000s. Studio would be awesome, right? That's a natural place for it.
Yeah.
I can't remember where this was. I was at a meeting internationally. I can't remember what country it was. But I was in a meeting, and someone was saying one of the reasons they loved the tablet PC at the time was because someone was drawing on the whiteboard, and they could draw what they were drawing on their screen. And I was like, what are you talking about? I just picked up my camera. And I was like, click.
Click.
You know, and back then, it was like a Kodak digital camera, but not a phone, you know, but... I have to be an artist? Like what I'm going to recreate this thing? Like, you know,
like a Van Gogh.
Like a crime scene, you know.
My light bulb moment came back in the days when Bill Gates was pushing tablet PCs. I was sitting on an airplane next to a guy who was using one of those. And he was a salesman. And he said, well, you see what I do? And I think it was one of those HPs where you fold the... You know, it was a convertible. You fold the top over. I fold the top over, flip it around, start my PowerPoint, and I can draw on it. I can annotate it as I'm showing people stuff. I can add notes. And that actually was kind of an eye-opener. I thought, oh, that would be a very good use case for it. So there are times in presentations or brainstorming or barnstorming that it would make kind of sense. I just don't know how it will be on a phone.
I like most about the show is how I never get to lift anything down.
No, I just imagine people flying in their little biplane with their little helmet and goggles, the scarf out the back.
Why are there holes all over the whiteboard? I was barnstorming.
But I will try it. I will try it. So Windows 10 now, iOS soon, web soon, Android eventually. And Skype Classic.
I'm not dead yet. So over the weekend. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to give the quick overview of the news. Yep. So Microsoft's, we've known they were going to kill Skype Classic, which was Skype 7 for a while, and they never would give us a date. They kept saying, yeah, someday. And this week they gave us a date, September 1. So if you're using Skype 7, the classic version, it's not going to work anymore after September 1st.
Oh, see, we've been giving people links to that for various reasons.
This is a problem. The advice you're going to want to give people is to test this because before the announcement, we got this. I didn't know about this in advance. So I think it was Monday morning at 9 a.m. They sent out an email and said, hey, we're going to send this thing out later today. Here's the news. I had already kind of witnessed this because over the weekend, I noticed that on at least three different computers, the Skype desktop application, which I continue to use, got an upgrade. And I did the upgrade because I mindlessly upgrade everything.
You're a good boy.
Yeah. But then I noticed when it came up, it was like the modern app. It's like the Skype for Windows 10 app, meaning it's Skype 8.0. So it looks the same. I guess it's probably not exactly the same. But the first thing I noticed after I did that was that you lose multi-window support. So I like to use Skype that way. I like my chat windows to all be in separate windows. I can alt tab to them. It makes sense to me. But this is one window. And you can't, I haven't figured it out yet. I mean, there must be some keyboard control you can use to go between messages. I haven't figured it out yet. But I did, we did that little daily thing with Brad and it failed. And it was like what you experienced where you said you couldn't hear us and I couldn't hear him.
Yeah.
And I uninstalled it and reinstalled I keep it. It's funny. I specifically keep this up in OneDrive so I can always get it. But I reinstalled Skype 7. Whatever it is, which is what I'm still
using. You're saying even if I kept the file, I wouldn't be able to use it after September 1st?
That's what they're saying.
That's what they're saying. Yep.
So I've already been
talking. Also, we should tell people Windows 7, 8, and 10. So it's not just Windows 10 that they're doing this on. It's everywhere.
And boy, what's weird about it, I don't have, because it's not installed now, but Windows 10 comes with a modern like store app version of Skype. Yeah. This does not replace that. It sits next to it. They look identical now. You have like two goofy looking versions of Skype, both which I believe are based on completely different technologies.
Right. One is Electron, right? That's the new one.
Great.
Isn't it?
Oh, is it really?
Yes, that's right. I think so. Yes.
And then the other one that's already on your machine is UWP, I think. Mm-hmm. They're both there if you want them to both be there.
I don't want them both. I don't want either one of them to be there.
Does one work better than the other? What are the differences besides the platform?
The problem is you don't.
I guess use the store version, the UWP version.
Yeah, maybe I should attest to that. I'm going to have to figure this out because I now have about 45 days or less, mm-hmm. I guess, before this hard stop happens, September 1. So either they fix the problem or I'm going to have to test it again. I don't know. I'm not happy about this, but I would just. People are going to want to test this. If you do podcasts with other people or whatever, I hear there are other shows you do. I don't know. if they're on Windows and on the Mac too, I think, because I believe this is for Mac too, right?
It's coming to Mac. It's coming to iOS. It's coming everywhere. Like this is going to be.
They're
going to
want to not. You don't want to discover when the podcast is starting that this doesn't work.
Right. Yeah, so since everybody is getting an automatic update, that's the other thing. You don't really get to opt into this. It just happens.
No, you do opt into it. You actually get a prompt.
I'm hearing from many of our hosts that it just happened. I got 8.
I got it too.
Yeah. I've been prompted.
It said, do you want to get the latest version?
Window. Okay.
It doesn't tell you.
It's cute. It's like, oh, no, you're going to want it. It's awesome.
It's awesome. I don't think we've told anybody to downgrade but we do have a link if people, but I don't know. I have to ask Alex to see if we've had to.
I'm going to just assume it was me. I don't know, but it makes me really nervous.
As I was saying to Mary Jo when you disappeared, it's not unusual
that was me upgrading.
With a new version of Skype to have to redo all your settings. The question is if it'll remember those the next time.
Sure.
You don't want to have to do it every time. You might have to do that once.
If you can keep the call to 17 minutes or less, it's going to work great.
Skype apparently in Mac OS did return the mic auto gain switch to switch it off, which was a problem for us.
Okay.
Because people were using, couldn't turn off auto gain, which we tell them to do.
Right.
But so that's good. Maybe maybe there's some incremental improvements. Let's take a little time out, give you guys a chance to go battle Skype or your cats, whatever it is you do when I'm doing commercials. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage. Maybe you'll listen because this one's you want to listen to. Buying a house is a big deal. Tis indeed. Paul knows that. It's the biggest check you're ever going to write. Biggest purchase. Changes your life. You're going to be living in it for a while. So you shouldn't be doing it under pressure. You shouldn't be doing it with anxiety. And Quicken Loans, the biggest, best lender in the country, and Rocket Mortgage know that for a lot of people, this is the experience. Because especially now with interest rates ratcheting up, you feel like if it takes me a while to find a house, it's going to cost me more every month. It's going to cost me more. And so you rush, but you take your time. You want to find the perfect place. And Rocket Mortgage has a solution. They've created the power buying process. Actually, this works great for you in two different ways. Quicken Loans will verify your income, assets, and credit in less than 24 hours and then give you a verified approval. That is as good as cash. The seller knows, I've got the loan. I've already been approved. And that means, you're at a parity with a cash buyer and you're way ahead of somebody who doesn't have the loan yet. So in this competitive market, this is a time to get that. But once you have the power buying process, the verification, you can qualify for their all-new Rate Shield approval. This is amazing. They lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. There is no pressure, no anxiety. Your rate can't go up, but it can go down. If the rates do go down, it'll lower your rate. So it's a win in either way, but it definitely takes the anxiety out of home hunting, takes the pressure to find a house off. You've got 3 whole months. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from America's best mortgage lending company, Quicken Loans. And Rocket Mortgage, to get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/windows. rocketmortgage.com/windows. You could do it on your phone. You could even do it from an open house. You could do it anywhere. Get that rate shield approval. Only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply. And it is based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states at MLSConsumerAccess.org number 3030. We're talking RocketMortgage.com/windows. Check it out. And we thank Quicken Loans for their support. RocketMortgage.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo. I should say Paul Thurrott slash Mary Jo Foley. You know what? I got a little pet peeve. Every once in a while, I'll see this. There's a couple of pet peeves, and I see these in commercials where they say www.
Oh, boy.
Like, you don't have to do that anymore. It's almost as bad as for a long time. This was a battle we fought on Tech TV. People said http://www.
Thank God. Just belabor the point.
Thank God that's over. Then the other one I see a lot, and I don't understand why, is backslash or forward slash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I blame, of course, it's Microsoft's fault because everything, all slashes were forward slash until Microsoft came along with the backward slash. But I just want to say, backwards. You don't have to say forward slash. A slash is a slash. You only have to say backward slash. Am I wrong?
No.
No. Yeah, okay. Just, it's a little pet peeve. It's not a big deal.
We can't solve the English language today, no. But
just, we don't need to say forward slash. Just saying.
I like it.
The PC market, believe it or not, I was stunned to learn, grew this quarter for the first time in 6 years. And that's not just Gartner and IDC.
Yeah, I can't remember which, but believe it or not, the previous quarter, one of them claimed that the market grew a little bit. The other did not. I average them because they measure things a little bit differently.
That's the problem, right? Some include tablets, some don't. Some include
Chromebooks some don't. So here's what's interesting about this to me. First of all, it's not like we're back, baby, and I'm going to pull the confetti string and we're going to have a party here. But
it's the post-PC era.
Yeah. It's just like vinyl. Records are coming back.
Yeah, baby.
1.9% growth is not anything to be too excited about. It's just that for the previous 6 years, literally, we've seen the PC market fall, meaning that at the height of the market, I think it was 2010 or 2011, PC makers sold 365 million computers. This past year, they sold 261 million computers. That's a shortfall of 100 million computers plus. That's how far the market's fallen, by about a third. It's notable. It's interesting. And the question is whether we're plateauing, whether it just keeps going down over time. We don't know. But the two things that are interesting about this is, again, I forget which is which, but one of the companies, Gartner IDC, measures Chromebooks as part of PCs. Their growth numbers were higher because Chromebook sales are growing. But both of them agreed that the primary trigger for this, in fact, the largest trigger, I guess it's the same thing, primary, is business PC growth. And if that wasn't happening, the PC market would have fallen off of a cliff because consumers are not buying PCs, apparently. And it's part of this natural cycle we see with Windows 10 in this case. Windows 7 is ticking away. Support is ending in January,
2020?
Yeah, about 18 months from now. So we're finally starting to see this uptick that we expected. Well, as always happens late, actually, but we've been kind of hoping for where businesses are upgrading. And not all of them are going to get new computers, right? So some of them are going to use the new operating system on the existing computers. But a lot of them, because of the lengthy upgrade cycle, are going to get new computers. And I think what that means is that for the next couple of years, we're going to be plus or minus a couple of percentage points from growth and no growth. Because there's going to be so much of this happening. So again, we're never going back to double digit growth or anything like that, but at least isn't falling off a cliff anymore overall.
At the partner show this week, that was a big thing they were trying to rev the partners about. They're like, guys, there's like multi-billion dollars worth of opportunities getting people off Windows 7 onto Windows 10, right? And that's new hardware, it's consulting services, it's operating system upgrades, and everything that goes with that, basically.
Do you think this might be the last major upgrade cycle of its kind?
It could be if Windows 10 is really the last version of Windows.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting when you go from Vista to, this goes back to Vista, if I'm not mistaken, from Vista to 7, from 7 to 8, and now to 10, the system requirements haven't really changed, with the exception of some older chipsets are no longer supported now in Windows 10. Yep. But as far as the horsepower you need, the amount of RAM, the amount of disk space, mm-hmm. et cetera, that has actually not changed in a really long time. That's a really long time.
Well, look at Windows 10 on Go, the Surface Go. It's running on a Pentium, right? Even though it's Pentium Gold, it's still Pentium, right?
Yep.
So, yeah.
Yep. So, there you go.
Yep.
We're back, baby.
We're barnstorming Windows.
We're going to take back the PC market one tablet at a time.
We are.
So, Kensington announced today at Inspire, for some reason, a dock for Surface Pro that turns it into something that looks like a mini Surface Studio.
Oh, dear.
So it has all the expansion off the back.
Wait a minute.
It looks pretty cool.
Oh, no.
Paul, I am a premium account member.
Then you should sign in. Just sign in. It'll be fine. It's on the bottom right.
Where is it? Oh, good. No, I don't mind. I don't mind. I understand why people do that. Because
this doesn't impact impacts people who have never. It's a free account. Like, you don't have to spend money to do this. Like, it's just a free account.
Well,
I feel the need to occasionally apologize for the fact that this thing is a business. And
yeah. No, I play the premium thing. All right, here we go. Surface dock from Kensington.
There's a couple of things that are really cool about this.
Should I show the video?
Yeah, I think I haven't. Yeah, actually, unfortunately, right, because you can't see the picture of it there. That's goofy.
All right, let's see the video.
What it looks like is a miniature Surface Studio. Mm-hmm. So it works with Surface Connect, which is great, but it provides the same functionality as Surface Studio, meaning it supports that studio mode where you can write on it.
Oh, I like this.
With the pen. Yeah.
Does it only work with the newest Surface Pro? Is that the case?
That I don't know.
You need to make a little mini one for the Surface Go.
Yeah. It seems like it should work with Surface Pro 4, but I don't know.
Oh, God. It turns it into a Surface Studio. Turns it into a Surface Studio. That's basically what it's doing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is a tiny one, but yes.
A little mini Surface Studio. I love it.
Yeah.
It's a cool idea.
This is a fantastic idea.
It just looks like
$300.
Wow.
$300.
So you need a Surface Pro to do this.
Yeah.
If you have it. Now, of course, you also need a Brooklyn skateboard loft. But if you have it, a Surface Pro, I would get this in a heartbeat.
Go home on my skateboard.
Don't you like how he smiled at his computer as he left?
I am everything that's wrong with the world. Good night.
No, that's a neat product.
Yeah, it is.
I think that's great. $300.
I think it looks cool.
Yeah. It looks so much like a tiny Surface Studio. I can't even believe it.
It also makes it more natural to use that device with a bigger screen. I think one of the issues with a Surface Pro today, if you use the Surface dock, is you kind of plug the wire into the side.
Right.
And then your Surface is kind of over on the side. And it's the primary display, but it's not really the primary display. I think it makes for a more natural interaction with an external display. It's nice.
Very nice. Mini Surface.
Mm-hmm.
You compete me. Mary Jo, you might want to relax for a little bit because it's time.
It's
actually Xbox time.
I didn't have this in the notes, but I noticed today Xbox was tweeting out about the what they're calling the ultimate Xbox game sale, which is interesting because a month ago, they had what they described at the time as the best Xbox game sale of the year. So I assume that the ultimate game sale is actually the penultimate game sale.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that's happening starting tomorrow. I don't have any details on that, but it's something like some games are up to 65% off, something like that. It's definitely going to be worth looking at if you're an Xbox fan. But the other two things that are happening this week are Microsoft finally started externally testing the Redstone 5 version of the Xbox One system software, which is I think they said literally is going to be version 1810. So it's the one that's based on the version of Windows 10 that Microsoft is now testing.
This is a whole new redesign again?
No, it's just a new version. I mean, honestly, so far there isn't a lot in the way of, you know, big new features. Your avatar is going to be more prominent if you want it to be. Right. I don't know why you would want that, but, you know, whatever. So far nothing major going on there that I can see.
I do not like the new UI.
I don't either.
It just seems to get in the way.
Yeah. And then we've been waiting on this all year, but Microsoft teased that at GamerCon, I think it's called, they're going to announce new hardware. And the big assumption is that means the next generation Elite controller, which I've been really looking forward to. My Elite controller, I've dropped it about 150 times. If you look over here, there's like beautiful, like nice padding, and it's kind of stripped off. So I have kind of a high
grip. You grip it a little harder on your left, huh?
I think I sweat on the left side a lot. I don't know what did. Yeah, it's kind of fell apart. But I just beat this thing to death. It's $150 worth of controller right there.
Wait a minute. Mahedi has updated the article to say Microsoft has quietly updated the blog post, removing any mention of new hardware. Major Nelson says this was an error.
Oh, jeez.
So don't get your hopes up.
Well, hold on a second. Only planning to reveal new Xbox bundles and accessories. That's an accessory.
Oh.
In other words, I think people misunderstood this to mean, oh, is there a new console coming?
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So it still could be the year. This is when they would release it, right?
We're overdue. I don't know why they didn't announce this at E3.
It's
overdue.
Just in time for Christmas.
Yeah. Well, I want it just in time. Look, I would pay for this thing sight unseen if I could buy this right now. I don't understand why they haven't announced this.
Yeah.
Soon, I guess.
And Mary Jo is readying her sharpened pencil because tomorrow Q4 earnings.
Yeah. This is their big, you know, end of fiscal 18 earnings report comes out tomorrow. And ahead of it, Dina Bass over at Bloomberg had a really interesting profile of Amy Hood, who is the CFO of Microsoft. And the reason it's interesting is she never gives interviews. I've never even met her.
Right.
She doesn't talk to the tech press pretty much. But there's little things in here that kind of, I was telling Paul, are interesting for us because of things we talk about when earnings come out. So one of the things in this says, one of the concerted efforts she made when she became CFO a few years back was to try to get everybody's eyes off Windows and onto the cloud. So that's why Microsoft talks in all their earnings report about how great they're doing in the cloud. Look at this cloud number. We set a cloud estimate for ourselves and revenue, and we beat it. This is why you don't hear them talk about Windows on the calls anymore. They were like, Windows business is declining. Let's get everybody to look at cloud and write their headlines to be, look how great Microsoft's doing in the cloud. So that was part of her mission. And one of the things that made her successful for Microsoft as a CFO. Another interesting little tidbit in here. Listen to this sentence. She has shown herself willing to take money away from legacy divisions like Windows that are used to getting what they want and give it to more promising businesses like the Cloud Group.
Wow.
Yeah.
we've seen Ruth Porat at Google play this role too. And I never thought the CFO had that much strategic clout.
People say she is a big part of the reason, like really big part of the reason the new Microsoft is what it is financially and investment wise. And she has been the one kind of steering where they are making their acquisitions, talking to Satya about, hey, we should be putting our money here, not here. Right. And she's been like his right hand woman.
Interesting.
Much. Yeah.
Is that, you understand business better than I, is that typical of a CFO role? I mean, I always thought the CFO just does the books.
Yeah. I think the new CFOs are much more kind of part of the SLT, the senior leadership team. They're like part of the group and not just the people counting the numbers. And anybody you talk to about Amy Hood is like, she's the best CFO Microsoft ever had.
Yeah. But yet you don't hear a lot of ink. There's not a lot of press about her.
No,
that's why that piece was interesting.
Or Luca Maestri over at Apple. Both of them really are much more forward.
Yeah. You never.
I think, don't we all miss the Fred Anderson days? Remember? All a good CFO had to do was just cook the books and get you your options underpriced. The good old days.
But do you think, do you think CFOs now determine strategy or implement strategy as determined by the CEO? Or,
I think it probably depends on the company, right? And how much the CEO relies on your vision and knowledge. She used to be the CFO for the server business, I think. Where Satya Nadella worked.
This is the paragraph I noticed. She joined Microsoft in 2002 and expected to stay only a few years before leaving for a startup. She even timed her start date to get maximum access to the employee stock purchase plan. So that's what you want, CFO. CFO. Yeah, that's what you want.
Yep.
She's working the numbers all the time.
Yeah.
When she's not kiting credit cards.
Now, come on, Paul. Come on. I'm sure she's a very good. She obviously is a very good CFO.
She is.
But I wonder if she and Satya to go get in those SLT meetings and say,
and
no, I would bet he says, well,
I think it's more of
we
a
see cloud as the future. And she might say, well, in that case, let's stop talking about Windows on analyst calls, that kind of thing.
I bet
it makes sense. You want to show growth, and you know, she has her fingers on that stuff.
Yeah. And if you look at how people write up their earnings report, you'll see it tomorrow, too. Nobody is going to talk about Windows in these stories. They're going to talk about, look at their cloud run rate.
Well, I'm going to talk about Windows.
I mean, you and me will, but business press won't.
Why can't they talk about Windows?
Yeah. We can talk about Windows.
We can do anything we want. She's not the boss of you, Paul.
That's right.
Interesting article. Really interesting article.
Yeah. It's a really good one.
And it really is opening my eyes. When we talk about Google, Ruth Porat, who's actually Alphabet's CFO, has very much shaped that business by cutting off, just as Hood is doing, cutting off legacy businesses, saying, you're only going to get this much. She's also doing the same with some of the moonshots. Mm-hmm. Really interesting. Very interesting new role. Yep. I'd like to announce that I will from now on be the CFO of Twit. No, I would be the worst possible choice. I guess Lisa's the CFO. She's a CEO and CFO wrapped into one. I'm just some guy.
You're the talent.
She sometimes says you're like the queen. I'm the prime minister.
Wow. I think of you more as the booth babe.
Yeah, that's it. I'm the booth babe here. But I'm doing a terrible job, by the way.
Sure.
All right, let's take a break. Back of the book coming up. Paul Thurrott from Thurrott.com, Thurott.com. Please become a premium member. It's not expensive. You're less than a lot of other sites and well worth it for the premium content. And there's lots of free content there, too. Mary Jo Foley, she's at ZDNet, and her blog is all about Microsoft.com. Our show today brought to you by LastPass. I shouldn't really have to tell anybody listening how great LastPass is. I hope by now you're using it. If you're not, well, hie thee to lastpass.com/twit and sign up. I want to pitch you for your business, though. Your business ought to be using it. It's maybe even more important. LastPass is critical to keeping your passwords secure. You know, passwords are a terrible idea. Let's just admit this. You know, Bill Gates at one point, I remember, said, someday there won't be any more passwords. We're still waiting, Bill. We do need them to log on to websites, but also to log into accounts. You need passwords everywhere, even just to log into your computer. The problem is no one can remember all those passwords, so the tendency is to do two really bad things. One, use the same password over and over again. That's a really terrible idea because of all the breaches that are going on these days. If you use a password at a site, that site gets breached. The first thing bad guys do is try that same password everywhere else. So having the same password at more than one site, that's a no-no. The other thing we do that's bad is we're trying to make something we can remember. So, I mean, that's why we reuse passwords. It's also why we make passwords really bad. Things like your birth date and your dog's name or your kid's birthday and your mother's maiden name. Stuff that's easily guessed, easily brute forced. LastPass solves this problem because you don't have to generate passwords anymore. LastPass does. They make good, long, strong, totally random passwords. And you don't have to remember them either. LastPass keeps track of them. It's the ultimate password vault. You have one password. I have a mnemonic pattern I use. I don't want to say what it is, but I use song lyrics, let's say that. If you have something that you know in your head, you can use that as your LastPass password. Still long and strong, but something you can type quickly and easily into your computer. Unlock the vault. It's the first thing I install on every computer, every phone. I put LastPass on there because then everything else I install just goes boom, 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 boom. Autofill makes it very simple, very easy. In your business, you want to be able to also, because no matter what I say, no matter whether you're using LastPass, we use LastPass Enterprise here, people are still going to do those old bad habits. So LastPass gives you over 100 policies that you can enforce. You don't have to enforce all of them, but you have control of them over how people create and use and store passwords. So you can make sure that they're using good passwords. You can turn on two-factor. That's what we do here. Every password has to have two-factor if that's available, including LastPass itself. Actually, LastPass can be secured with many forms of second factor. YubiKeys, those Duo fobs, we use those. And we require that. You can also force password resets at a regular interval. That's handy if an employee leaves, things like that. But even then, when I share passwords with engineers and stuff, you have passwords in your business like QuickBooks, you know, your financials, your websites, your servers. You don't want to be disseminated all around. You may not even want the employee who needs access to that to know what that password is. So, for instance, you can share a password without them seeing it or being able to change it. So you totally control it. They can't just exfiltrate it, take it home, and log into your QuickBooks. They don't know what the password is, but it logs in for them. Organized database logins, SSH keys, software licenses. That's another thing. I trust LastPass so much I put all my social security numbers, passports, IDs, you know, driver's license, credit cards. They're all in LastPass. In that encrypted blob, not even LastPass can get access to. You and your employees can also take the security challenge. The LastPass security challenge will tell you how secure your existing passwords are, show you areas of improvement, and even help you in an automated way change those passwords. I love LastPass. 13 million people use it. I've been using it for years. We had Steve Gibson interview its founder and the guy who wrote the software for it, and Joe Segrist, and he showed Steve the software. Steve gave it his approval. In fact, Steve uses it too. 81% of all breaches are caused by weak or reused passwords. You could do better with LastPass. Check out LastPass for Enterprise for your business, or LastPass for Teams if you have 50 or fewer employees. LastPass Premium for personal use. At home, I use LastPass Families. That makes it easy to share passwords. I even have an emergency access code so that my loved ones, if something should happen to me, if I get disabled or die, can get into my LastPass. There's so many great features. At home and at work, this is the solution. Fix your password woes with LastPass, the number one password manager. Most preferred. Learn more at LastPass.com/twit. LastPass.com/twit. Pick the product that's right for you. Back to Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Let's kick things off with Paul Thurrott and your tip of the week.
Yeah, so I have a tip and an app pick, and the tip is an app pick, and the app pick is also kind of a tip. So I actually swapped them before. It's confusing. As part, we're doing a home swap soon. And
where are you
as
going
part
this year?
Of that,
Sweden?
It's a Stockholm, yeah.
Stockholm, how fun.
How do I explain how I did this? You know, the way I kind of consume content has evolved over the years. So I spend a lot of time, I'll go to YouTube and just look at what's recommended to me based on my usage. And I just start watching videos. It's probably not super atypical these days. If you use something like Pocket to save articles you want to read for later, they have a feed there as well. And I often find articles to read that way, or I'll go to the Google app has that feed that's off the side of the Android home screen. I often find things to read there. And so in the process of doing all this, I came across a TED Talk by Brandon Eich, who, of course, invented the JavaScript programming language and has been apologizing for it ever since.
It's his fault.
It is his fault. He says that. And he has a TED Talk called How to Fix the Web. It's about a year old. And I don't think he explicitly sells us on his new Brave browser. But I remembered that he, you know, does that. And I kind of went and took a look at it. And I decided I'm gonna go back and evaluate alternative browsers again. And I think maybe that's not such a horrible idea for people to do as well. So I always reevaluate Edge with every new Windows 10 version. I regularly go back and reevaluate Firefox, especially with the new Quantum versions. But I don't look at Brave Opera or Vivaldi, which I think are the three big ones these days, all that often. Brave and Opera both have mobile app versions as well. I find that to be somewhat key, but it's not completely required. Vivaldi does not have a mobile app version, at least not yet. So that's something I'll be doing. But I think it might be interesting for people. The point of him doing this is that he feels like the web has been subverted. And part of the way it was subverted, of course, was through JavaScript. And he's tried to make a web browser that is just doesn't do sneaky stuff behind the scenes. So I'm going to take a look at that stuff. It's kind of an interesting area
to explore. You use Firefox? I've started using Firefox.
I use Chrome. So yeah. I go back and forth. Right now I'm using Chrome. I did use Firefox when I went back.
It's better now.
Last year. Oh, yeah. 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 It's much better now.
The new version honestly, has some nice features.
Yeah. I think... Yeah, all these browsers are kind of interesting.
Brave is neat. I like Brave.
I really like the Brave UI. That's the one thing that kind of does it for me. And it does automatic blocking of trackers and things. Right. There's some things there that I think are interesting. On a semi-related note, Microsoft added a feature called Windows Timeline to the latest version of Windows 10. It's kind of an expansion of that Windows tab key combination, what used to be called, Task View. And what it does is it provides you with a view of all of your open windows, but it does it over time. So you can scroll back through time and find the things you were working on in the past. The problem is it doesn't do a good job of, although I noticed the Canary version's in there, it doesn't automatically grab your Chrome or Firefox web browser sessions. So if you're using Edge, you're all set. It's in there. If you're using the shipping version of Chrome and Firefox, it's not. And so the man's name is... Dominic Mass wrote a add-on for both Chrome and Firefox that will allow you to get your web browsing into Windows Timeline. And it's called Windows Timeline Support, which I guess is pretty obvious, but it's kind of a weird name too. But it's free, obviously. It's just a browser add-on. So if you want your browsing history to be saved in Timeline, which could be especially useful if you're it's useful on one computer too, but if you're using multiple computers or if you're using Timeline in some capacity on a mobile device, either through the Microsoft Edge mobile browser or through the Microsoft Launcher. Actually, that's not even available yet, but someday in this future that will be available. That will become even more valuable.
I'm going to do that because I find myself using Timeline a lot.
Then you're going to want this. You're definitely going to want this.
Yeah.
So just search for Windows Timeline Support.
Nice. I shall install. Now it's time for Mary Jo Foley's Enterprise Pick of the Week. Mary Jo?
I have two Enterprise Picks of the Week. The first one is a book that if you're an Office 365 user and an IT pro, especially, you are going to want to know about. So there's this book called Office 365 for IT Pros. It's an ebook, so it comes in EPUB format and Kindle and PDF. It's 1,000 pages. And the good news is one of the authors, Tony Redmond, who works with Paul over at Petri, and the merry band of MVPs who co-author this with him are offering a discount on this for Windows Weekly readers. I mean, listeners, sorry. Readers and listeners, because you're going to read this if you get it. They update this monthly. They used to update it weekly, but now they're updating it monthly. So every time Microsoft does a big new addition of features to Office 365, they go into detail, like very deep detail on everything you want to know about SharePoint and OneDrive and the Office 365 clients. They already have the stuff about the free Teams version in the book, even though it just happened. So if you're somebody who wants to have that constantly updated, exhaustive information on Office 365, here's the link. And I'll also put this in the show notes so you can get it if you don't hear it. Gumroad, gumroad.com/i/0365IT/Windows Weekly.
I just bought a Gumroad book.
As a listener of our show, 20% off the cover price. So it'll be $40, which is a pretty good deal for a 1,000-page Bible on Office 365.
I'm not sure what the Galapagos iguana is on the cover for, but I'm not sure either. I like it. It's a good picture. Nice. Yeah, Gumroad does some really good developer stuff. I really like them.
Nice.
Yeah. And very generous of them.
I know. Thank you, Tony Redmond.
Yeah. Well, Tony wrote it, so it's really the author.
Him and all those other guys on the cover are the authors.
So I guess Gumroad lets you sell them yourself. It's like one of those.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it is. I'm not sure.
Mm.
Yeah. You can sell your own books on Gumroad.
Nice.
Yeah. And now, do you have a code name for us?
I don't have a code name, but I have another enterprise pick.
All right.
Today.
Even better. Even better.
Okay. So in addition to Windows 7 coming up on end of support, there are some other products coming up on end of support. Windows Server 2008 and 2008 R2 are coming up on end of support. Also January 2020, same as Windows 7. And SQL Server 2008 and 2008 R2 in July 2019. There are a lot of people still using these versions. You know what happens when it hits end of support? It means you don't get security updates anymore.
Uh-oh.
That's pretty dangerous on your server and your database. So Microsoft has come up with this idea, and I'm going to be interested to see how many people think they can take advantage of it. If you're running any of those products that are about to expire and you agree to take those workloads and put them in Azure, they're going to give you 3 more years of free security updates for those workloads. So not everybody can put every workload in the cloud. There are some real reasons you can't go to the cloud. But if you're somebody who has an old app, and you're like, you know what? I could put this in the cloud. And you're not ready yet to get off of the 2008 versions of those products, you might want to check out this new offer that they announced at Inspire, their partner show this week. I've got a lot of the details on my site about how you can qualify for it and what you need to do to take advantage of it. But unlike the custom patches that you can buy from Microsoft if you want to keep your on-premises workloads running after security updates end, this doesn't cost you anything, and it's free. If you want to keep your workload on-prem and you're not ready to update, they're going to charge you 75% of the cost of a license just to get security updates. It's not cheap. So check it out. You know, not every workload can work, but if yours can, it might be something worth checking out for your company.
Mary Jo, Paul Thurrott, I think we've
Leo Laporte.
A fine cider. And this is one even Paul might like.
Great. I don't know if he drinks cider.
I'll be the judge of that.
Well, he'll like the name anyway.
Right. So the name of the beer pick, which is actually a cider pick this week, is Shaxbury Rosé Cider.
You see, Paul? Try freezing this in your Slurpee.
I had some wine slushies last weekend, by the way.
Did you? Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Nice.
Aren't you special?
Isn't he?
Fine.
So I think of this as like, you know how we talk about hybrid computing? This is a hybrid drink for people who may like ciders and not sure if they like rosé, or rosé drinkers who are not sure if they like ciders. It's very dry. It tastes like a rosé wine to me. Like when I had
I had trouble following what you just said.
What's the if you don't like rosé or cider, maybe you'll like this.
Exactly. It's like a Surface Pro. It's a 2-for-1 device. This
for people who really hate computers.
Exactly.
A Surface Pro of alcohol.
Yeah.
It's made with apples, so you do taste the apples a bit. But it definitely tastes more like a rosé wine to me than it tastes like a traditional cider. Very dry, refreshing, good summer drink. Shaxbury is in, I don't know how you say the name of this town, Vermont. V-E-R-G-E-N-N-E-S, Vermont.
Vergen,
I know, very French.
But knowing Americans, they probably pronounce it Vergenes.
Vergenes. Yeah. So if you're ever up there, you can go to their tap. They have a really nice tap room. They have lots of different kinds of ciders. But the pick is the rosé, the rosé cider.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Well, as much as I hate to admit it, I think we've come to the conclusion of this fine program. if you enjoy what you've heard here today, I invite you to come back each and every week. We do the show every Wednesday around 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That'd be 1800 UTC. You can watch us do it. Watch us make the show live. Watch Paul nod off. Watch Mary Jo swat at her cat. Watch me change my clothes. It's all great fun that we edit out later. Do that at twit.tv/live. If you're doing that, you might as well be in the chat room, too. Bunch of great people in there. They're at irc.twit.tv. You can also get on-demand audio or video with the good parts snipped out. Well, actually, the good parts are left in. We snip out the other parts.
It's like surgery.
It's like surgery. We only give you the tastiest morsels. If you go to twit.tv/ww, or you find us in your favorite podcast application, just search for Twit or Windows Weekly, and you can subscribe to all the shows. And that way, you'll just get it automatically the minute it's done. And you can also, I know I've been saying this lately because I really think this is awesome. Any of the voice assistants, you just say, you know, ask for Windows Weekly, or sometimes sometimes the syntax will vary. Ask for the Windows Weekly podcast on Amazon's Echo. I think sometimes if you add on TuneIn, that helps for some reason. I'm not sure why. But that's a great way to listen to the most recent episode while you're puttering around the domicile. Paul Theriot, Theriot.com, Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com. Come back and do this again next Wednesday. What do you say?
Sounds good.
Awesome.
I'll be in Berlin next Wednesday.
Oh, really? Ooh. For an event?
Yeah, just to go to Berlin. I don't know.
So this is the beginning of your summer vacation?
Well, we're doing a side trip, so the side trip is to Berlin. And I'm actually going to meet with Microsoft when I'm there.
Oh, neat.
Because the Microsoft To-Do team is in Berlin.
Make sure you wear your black leather. Sure, that's the Wunderlist kids. The Wunder kids.
Yeah.
The Wunderkinder. I love Berlin. Mm. You're going to have a great time.
I do too.
And then at the week following, we'll be talking to you in Sweden?
Yep. Yeah, then I'll be in Stockholm.
Beauty of Sweden is they have bandwidth galore.
Mm. I hope so. Oh, you know, this has been a problem on some home swaps, you know, and we go to great lengths to make sure they have a decent connection. And oftentimes it will be, you know, 300 megabits down or whatever, and then up is like 0.5.
That's the issue, right? Because Sweden, every time I talk to somebody from Sweden, they say, oh, yeah, we have 10 gigabits, you know, it costs us $40 a month or something. I mean, they're just... Yep.
Hey, if it's that good, I'll stay.
It's government. And, you know. I think it's government-run infrastructure, and I think that's... Okay. I think they have a very... Well, I mean, it depends on what you're... Sure. There are people who own your home, the home you're...
I'm staying in a shanty in the...
Sweden has... I've been to Stockholm many times, and my favorite thing, because it's usually on a cruise ship, is to sail up
the
archipelago into Stockholm. Yep. It's stunning, especially in the summer. You're going to... Have a wonderful trip.
I know.
My daughter does not like boats. We've been kind of tiptoeing around the activities we'll be doing while we're there, which are going to involve boats.
Yeah, it should. It's a seafaring nation. And how long are you going to be there?
3 weeks.
Nice. Make sure you bring your Skype.
I will bring my Skype.
All right.
My Skype's set.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mary Jo. And thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly. Yay.